Welcome to the History of the Caribbean audiobook. If you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss a story. Today, we're honored to bring you Dreadlocks and Doctrine, Early Beliefs, Symbols, and Rituals. Get ready to immerse yourself in a powerful narrative that goes beyond music into legacy, resistance, and roots. Because here, our mission is simple: to keep our culture alive, one story at a time. Before the scriptures were written, the body spoke. And in the movement called Rastafari, the body became scripture. Long before temples were built or doctrines codified, early Rastas began crafting a theology written not in ink, but in symbols, in rituals, in the way they walked, lived, and breathed. It was a gospel of being, radical, visual, and unashamed. At the heart of this expression were the dreadlocks, not fashion, not rebellion for rebellion's sake, but covenant. Inspired by the Nazarites of the Bible, who vowed never to cut their hair as a symbol of divine dedication, the dreadlocks of early Rastas declared war on assimilation. In a world that labeled blackness as primitive, the locks shouted, "We will not be tamed. We are not your version of civilized. We are lion." To the authorities, they looked wild. To the church, they looked cursed. To Babylon, they were threatening. But to the faithful, they were sacred. Every twist held a prayer. Every coil carried history. It was a spiritual armor woven strand by strand. Then came the colors, red, gold, green, and black. Not just for aesthetics, but for revelation. Red for the blood of martyrs. Gold for the wealth of Africa. Green for the land, holy, healing, stolen. Black for the people, beautiful, divine, enduring. And around these colors formed the flag of spiritual liberation. Then there was the ganja, the herb. Smoked not for escape, but for elevation. The early Rastas called it the healing of the nation. It opened the mind, softened the heart, and sharpened the spirit. In the hills, ganja was burned in sacred circles where brethren reasoned through scripture and life. Babylon called it a drug. Rasta called it a sacrament. No less powerful were the drums and chants, the Nyabingi rituals. Ancient African rhythms fused with Christian psalms, but twisted into defiance. These weren't songs of praise for a white heaven. They were battle cries, healing chants, cosmic dialogues. The drum became the voice of ancestors, the chant a code from Zion. Then came the Ital lifestyle, pure living. No meat, no salt, no processed food, nothing from Babylon's polluted hands. Rasta taught that the body is the temple, and what entered it shaped the soul. Food became worship. Cleanliness became resistance. Simplicity became power. These early doctrines weren't written by theologians or debated in ivory towers. They were lived into existence through hunger, exile, and fire. Belief was born in barefoot walks across red earth, in whispered prayers during police raids, in shared meals in pinnacle huts, in sacred reasoning under stars. Rastafari, in its earliest breaths, was not a religion. It was a reversal, a return, a reclaiming, a way of saying, "We will not die the death you scripted for us. We will write our own." Doctrine came from life. Symbols came from survival. And rituals came from remembrance. And so the world began to see the signs, dreadlocks flowing, colors blazing, smoke rising, drums pounding, eyes lifted. They saw the doctrine written across faces hardened by suffering and softened by faith. The early Rastas didn't need a pulpit. Their entire existence was the sermon. And in that sermon, the world began to tremble.